The Eagles come off the bye week feeling refreshed, refocused, and look forward to facing the Atlanta Falcons this Sunday at Lincoln Financial Field. Welcome to Eagles Green Zone, everybody. I'm Becky Brensinger.
And I'm Bob Bumberry. Yeah, Becky, both teams coming off the bye. The Eagles, of course, 3-3. The Falcons undefeated at 6-0. We're going to talk about that and analyze it in 1st and 10.
And coming up, I sit down with Ricky Waters.
For who, for what? Those words seem to ring in my head. Yeah, you know, Ricky was in that original field of 64 and our greatest Eagle of all time bracket breakdown. He's not in that field anymore, but we're getting close to the Sweet 16. You can vote for that at PhiladelphiaEagles.com/vote.
And then we go back in time with Concrete Charlie's tackle that still has people talking. All here on Eagles Green Zone.
First and 10 time here on Eagles Green Zone, a time where we look ahead and analyze what lies next for the Philadelphia Eagles. And welcome to First and 10. I'm Bob Bumbera. I am joined by three-time Super Bowl winner Dan Klecko and Hall of Fame journalist Ray Dininger here on First and 10. And here, guys, this week, the undefeated 6-0 Atlanta Falcons visit the Philadelphia Eagles 3-3, two teams coming off the bye week. I want to know first, it was a really kind of tumultuous couple of weeks for the Eagles. Juan Castillo let go as defensive coordinator, Todd Bowles in. So what have the Eagles done from a mental, physical, and game plan point of view to get ready for this game and to come off a two-game losing streak? Ray, we'll start with you.
Well, I think this really sort of puts a challenge on the Atlanta Falcons in terms of preparation for this game, because they don't really know what they're preparing for. You know, with the change in defensive coordinator, it's very clear that obviously Todd Bowles is going to come out with some things that nobody has seen before, the Atlanta Falcons haven't seen before. So in terms of their preparation, Matt Ryan's preparation, the offensive coordinator's preparation for the Eagles, it's going to be different now, because they don't know exactly what the Eagles are going to come out with. And you can be sure that one of the things that Todd Bowles has said, he hasn't given us a lot of specifics, but enough to know that there are going to be changes. There's going to be new looks. There's going to be new coverages. I think there's going to be more blitzing. It's going to be a very different-looking team, and that's what the Atlanta Falcons, that's the position they find themselves in. They're preparing, but they don't exactly know what they're preparing for.
Guys, the Eagles have had some time now in the bye week to work on some issues, to try to work through some problems. What have they done on the offensive line specifically to try to improve, Ray?
Well, they made the one change at left tackle. Demetrius Bell's out. King Dunlap is in. And based on what we've seen so far, yeah, Dunlap has played that position better. So I'm not surprised. And I think Dunlap will improve the level of play there. But really, the problems go beyond that. I mean, it goes tackle to tackle, to be honest with you. And I think, to me, the greater concern is at right guard, is the way Dan Watkins is playing. I mean, here's a guy, we all know you've lost your starting center. We all know you lost Jason Peters. But you would expect the other guys who are the starters to raise the level of that line and keep it together, particularly the guy who's the number one draft pick, who you thought was going to be, if anybody was going to be the guy you're going to build this around, it would be Dan. And right now, in my view, I think he's struggling worse than anybody.
And that's the problem right now. There's no one to turn to. There's no one on the street you can go get. There's no one in your locker room that you think is better than Danny Watkins right now. I say the only way you can go into these games is protecting them with the run game, with the play-action passes, with some shorter drops. That's my opinion. That's what they need to do now, is just start protecting that O-line with the game plan.
So, Ray, how does Marty Morningwig plan against that Atlanta defense?
It's going to be difficult, because they're, as Dan said, they're very athletic and they're real fast. I mean, in my view, whenever you watch defense, to me, if your linebackers are fast, your defense is fast. You know, that's kind of where you get your speed on your team, and they have a real fast group of linebackers, Weatherspoon being the perfect example. I mean, everybody saw the hit that he put on RG3 a couple weeks ago. I mean, that's the kind of acceleration he has. He gets to the edges, and he's a physical player when he gets there. The guy that has really, I think, set the tone for this team, Dan's right about them having a lot of youth, but you know, it's the veteran guy, John Abraham, that has really kind of energized this group. I mean, he's been around for a long time, but he's a really good pure pass rusher. And this year, he's off to one of his best starts. He has 6 sacks. He had 3 in the game against Oakland. And one of the things that Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator, has done is what I think all good defensive coordinators do, is they play to the strength of their good players. And you know, John Abraham lines up all over the place. Mike Nolan's given him that kind of freedom. Sometimes he's in a 2-point stance on one side of the formation. Then the next time you have the ball, all of a sudden he's in a three-point stance at the other side of the formation. So he's taking his best player, his big playmaker, and he's putting him in positions where he can play him to his best advantage.
Well, you mentioned speed on the defense. Atlanta has it on offense as well. They've got the eighth-ranked offense in the league. And they also run that hurry-up. We can expect to see, I guess, that hurry-up offense Sunday at Lincoln Financial Field. You know, what do you do against that? What's Todd Bowles going to do against that? What's his plan?
Todd Bowles certainly, he didn't draw an easy one here with the first one up. But, you know, I think on the outside, I think I put DRC, I put him on Julio. I put Nnamdi on Roddy out there. I let him beat him up. And the safety's got to look at those guys. I almost think you got to go cover two. But then who stops Tony Gonzalez right now? He's a matchup nightmare for everyone, especially this team right here. Is it going to be Michael Kendricks? He's never seen a guy like this, so crafty. I can't tell you how many times, Bob, that he's covered 90% of the time, but Matt trusts him, and he knows with his body control and his hands and how big he is, just how to get open. To me, he scares me again. And if you decide to go all coverage against them, I know Michael Turner isn't having his best year, but they can still run the ball. And it's a real challenge this week. It's pick your poison almost, what you're going to get beat by a little bit.
Ray Dinninger, Dan Klecko, thanks, guys, for being with us always on First and 10. As we switch gears and take a look at the greatest Eagle of all time, our bracket breakdown. And, you know, Ricky Waters is on that list. Ricky played three seasons with the Eagles, over 5,000 yards from scrimmage, 32 touchdowns. For who, for what? Well, for you, Becky, of course, has the what, an interview with Ricky Waters.
We're here with former Eagle and five-time Pro Bowl running back Ricky Waters. Ricky, you were one of the most sought-after free agents after you won the Super Bowl with the 49ers. You know, why did you choose Philly?
Well, one of the main reasons was, you know, I grew up right down the expressway, you know, the turnpike from here. I feel like this is home for me. Ray Rose was received the job here. He was my defensive coordinator at the 49ers. He wanted to build a winner, and he said that he wanted to start with me, and he thought that if he could get me, that we would have a great chance of really building a winner here.
In your eyes, what would you say is your most defining moment in Philadelphia?
There were a couple, you know, but when we made it to the playoffs that first year, just making it, you know, no one thought we would. We were supposed to be in a rebuilding situation. It just was like a great feeling for me. The next year, we did even better. And then also when I went to the Seahawks and I came back here and we played, and the fans were just so gracious to me. I didn't know how I would be received, or they would boo me every time I got the ball and everything. I was prepared for anything, but all I got was love and the same passion that they gave me when I was playing here, they were giving me even when I left, and that meant a lot to me, and that's something that'll always stick with me and stay in my heart.
You were known for your personality on and off of the field. You know, how did football bring that out of you?
The funny thing was, nothing was ever staged with me. It was never a situation where I was like, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to do this dance when I score, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to spike, or anything to show, you know, another team up or anything like that. It was just always the feeling of wanting to play so well and do so well and going through 11 of the best athletes in the world to get a touchdown. You know, it just meant so much to me and felt so good anytime I would get there that it just came out.
You were quoted in saying that back then you didn't know what a concussion was.
Yes.
How much of a toll did football take on your body?
A lot, from head to toe. I mean, I have so many injuries, I can't even think about it. When I wake up in the morning, I just have to get going. I have to, you know, I do rehab every day, you know, from my toes to my ankles to my knees to my, well, I have a pin in my foot. I have 5 pins in my ankle, 3 in my hand, arthritis in my ankles and my knees and my hip, you know, in my wrist. I mean, it sounds crazy, but it's all in there. And then as far as like the concussions, I mean, I'm just not quite the same. A lot of people are like, man, what are you talking about? You speak very well, you know, everything's clear and all that kind of stuff. But if they knew me from before, then they would know that there are things that are different about me.
With the new NFL rules that are put in place, do you think that it's protecting current players?
I think that it's definitely a lot better. It's a lot better than when I was there. I know the fans don't like it so much because it's not as smash mouth and it's not as, you know. I mean, when I was playing, I mean, you could head slap. You could do a lot of crazy things that you can't do now and come with the forearm up in your chin and all that. I think it is getting better, but I think it still has a ways to go.
Looking back, would you still play the game?
I don't know. Truthfully, I don't know. I guess if you want to look at something as a barometer, my kids don't play. they don't play, and I don't really want them to play. So I think that says enough.
How does it feel coming back and being recognized by the team as an honorary captain versus the game against the Lions?
Oh, it was very special and very. It's really a great thing for me because my kids, they weren't even born when I was playing and doing my thing. So it was great for them to see that and see how I was received by the fans and just to come back and address the fans in that way and to be able to lead them in that cheer, the Eagles cheer and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just great. Like I said, it's coming home. I feel like it's a homecoming for me. And the fact that I was able to come back for the Lions game, it was really special to me.
Thank you for your time today, Ricky.
Oh, no problem.
I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Eagles Green Zone is brought to you by NovaCare Rehabilitation, the power of physical therapy. Dunkin' Donuts, America runs on Dunkin'. And Thomas Jefferson University Hospitals. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW for an appointment.
Ah, the bye week. Just the way I wanted to spend my Sundays on the in-laws' couch with no Eagles football, watching the Giants and the Cowboys win. Ugh. Thank God that's over, but now it is back to business, Eagles fans. It's back to football. And I know what some of you are thinking. On Sunday, are we going to see the team that found a way to win three games, or are we going to see the team that found a way to lose three games? I think you're going to see an Eagles team that's going to do whatever it takes to win. An Eagles team that controls their own destiny. Because the run to the playoffs starts today. But first things first, the Atlanta Falcons are coming to Lincoln Financial Field with a 6-0 undefeated record. Oh, well, la-di-da. 6-0. Oh, that's pretty impressive. But I got a record for you, all right? 0-5. That's your lifetime record against the Eagles at Lincoln Financial Field. And I got another record for you. How about 13-0? That's Andy Reid's record coming out of the bye. You know you can't beat that man with an extra week to prepare. You know what? Trying to beat Andy Reid coming out of the bye is like trying to beat Ed Hockley in a push-up contest. It's like trying to beat Mike Tomlin in an Omar Epps look-alike contest. It's like trying to beat Tom Brady in a Who's Married to the Hottest Supermodel contest. You're never gonna win. You never win at Lincoln Financial Field. Andy's never lost after the bye. That's math so simple, even Asante Samuel can tackle it. Oh yeah, you might be 6-0, Atlanta, but this week, you're stepping into the wrong birdcage.
We are continuing our search for the greatest Eagle of all time with our bracket breakdown, getting real close to filling out the Sweet 16. Dan Klecko and Ray Dininger join us again. And Dan, we look at last week's winners. Anything stand out to you?
Thanks, Bob. I think this thing's going to start to get a little bit easier. I mean, Ray, you look at these. Chuck Benderek, I think he breezes through to the finals. Mild upset, Eric Allen over Mike Quick. Seth Joyner over Wes Hopkins. You know, no real surprise there. But we were talking a little bit, and we got a little bit of an issue with this one right here.
Well, I do. I mean, in this bracket, you have two Hall of Famers. You have Chuck Bednarik, and we agree he's got to go through the finals. The other Hall of Famer is this guy, Norm Van Brocklin. And I understand Randall Cunningham had some great seasons here. The thing with Van Brocklin is Van Brocklin only played three seasons as an Eagle.
Yeah.
But his 1960 season, to me, is the greatest season any quarterback has ever had, single season. The Eagles won the championship. He was the MVP of the regular season, and he was the MVP of the championship game. So if I had a vote, I would have voted for Van Brocklin.
Well, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Anytime, as I've said on this show in the past, anytime you're in the Hall of Fame, you get a little bump in my book. But then let's go to this week, who they'll be voting on. And we look at our picks right here. We got Steve Van Buren versus Timmy Brown. You know, I think we all love Timmy Brown and what he was, but Steve Van Buren, once again, a Hall of Famer and maybe the greatest Eagle of all time.
Yeah, and I think Van Buren's certainly the greatest running back of all time. Timmy was a terrific all-purpose back, but this one's easy. You got to go with Van Buren there. And Brian Westbrook, you know, in terms of all-purpose yardage, still number one in the Eagles record book and had a great career. So Westbrook, I think, gets the nod over Chad Lewis.
I do, too. I agree with you there. Wilbert Montgomery versus David Akers. Look, I love David. David, I love you if you ever catch this, but you're a kicker. And Wilbert Montgomery, obviously one of the greatest running backs in the history of the Eagles.
And we've talked about him before. I still think maybe pound for pound, maybe the toughest guy that's ever played for the Eagles and obviously heart and soul of the Vermeil Super Bowl team. And this guy here, Tommy McDonald, we talk about Hall of Famers. He is a legit Hall of Famer. And I still think, in my view, the most explosive dynamic wide receiver this franchise has ever had. 13 touchdowns in a 12-game season in 1960. finished his career in Philadelphia with an average of 19.2 yards per catch. Those numbers will advance you in any bracket.
Sorry, Jerry. Ray has spoken. But, Bob, you see this week, you see how it's going to start to get a little bit easier, but then it'll get a little bit harder at the end. Bob, break it down for us.
Yeah, Danny, you can still vote for your greatest Eagle of all time at PhiladelphiaEagles.com/vote.
I played my high school ball in Louisiana, Destrehan High School. We had a pretty good team, a lot of D1 guys. Quarterback went to LSU. Running back went to Arkansas. We ended up winning the state championship. We went 15-0. It felt pretty good. Just going into college, I wasn't recruited by the big-time programs. Even though I was a four-star recruit coming in, I had offers to TCU, to Tulsa, to Illinois, to ULL. I chose to go to Tulsa. When I chose to go to Tulsa, everybody was like, man, well, why Tulsa? So, I mean, after a while, I got there for the first year. I sat there and I was like, I don't know why I chose to go to Tulsa. I used to wake up in my bed thinking about it. But I mean, now that I look back, I wouldn't change that for anything. My freshman year, I was a freshman All-American. My sophomore year, I was an honorable mention All-American. My junior year, I was a second team All-American. I didn't play my senior year. So I went into the draft after that. I didn't get drafted. I thought I would be. I ended up getting signed by the Philadelphia Eagles, which turned out to be great. I went through training camp, had a pretty good training camp. It feels good. I feel great. I feel like I'm at home here. I wouldn't change that for anything. And I definitely love being in Philadelphia. It's my new home now, and I'm just trying to move forward with that right now.
As the final seconds ticked off the clock, Concrete Charlie stood over Packers fullback Jim Taylor, securing the Eagles' third championship in 12 years. This also marked Vince Lombardi's first and only loss in the playoffs. We give you Prior to the Snap.
The 1960 NFL Championship game win versus the Green Bay Packers is one of the most memorable moments in Eagles history as they captured their third championship. Chuck Bednarik, or Concrete Charlie, as he was affectionately known around Philadelphia, made one of the game's most unforgettable plays as he tackled and stood over Packers fullback Jim Taylor as the final seconds ticked off the clock. It's a moment that's ingrained in Philadelphia fans' memories as it gave the city its first title since 1949. But prior to that snap, there were plays before that tackle that helped bring home the championship to Philly. The game started poorly for the Eagles as they turned the ball over on their first two possessions, but they were able to escape with minimal damage as the defense held the Packers to just 6 points. The Eagles struck back with a Norm Van Brocklin to Tommy McDonald touchdown pass and a late field goal to give them a 10-6 halftime lead. Both teams were held scoreless in the third quarter, but Green Bay took the lead in the fourth when Bart Starr threw a 7-yard touchdown pass to Max McGee. The Eagles answered on their next possession with about 5 minutes to go as rookie running back Ted Dean gave the Birds the go-ahead score from 5 yards out, making it 17-13. Even with the late fourth quarter score, the game was far from over. The Packers' offense worked the ball deep into Philly territory, threatening the Eagles' title hopes. On the final play of the game, Starr swings the ball over to Taylor, who puts his head down and charges towards the end zone. After breaking tackles and heading inside the 10-yard line, Bednarik pursues the charging Taylor, wraps him up, and wrestles him to the ground. He then lies on top of Taylor as the final seconds tick off the clock, giving Philadelphia the championship. Packers coach Vince Lombardi went on to win 3 NFL championships and 2 Super Bowls from 1961 to 1967 and finished his career with an impressive 9-1 postseason record. But his one and only loss came at the hands of Concrete Charlie and the 1960 Eagles.
Eagles Green Zone is brought to you by NovaCare Rehabilitation, the power of physical therapy, Dunkin' Donuts, America runs on Dunkin', and Thomas Jefferson University Hospitals. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW for an appointment.
You know, Bob, with this bracket breakdown, it's finally whittling itself down to the Sweet 16.
Oh, Becky, we are not messing around here. We're getting serious with this Sweet 16. Hall of Famers, all-timers, and the great thing is you still have time to vote for the greatest Eagle of all time. Of course, it's PhiladelphiaEagles.com/vote.
And speaking of some memorable Eagles, I sat down with one of them, Mike Mamula himself, and he dishes on his secret to success at the NFL Combine. For Bob Bembera and Becky Brensinger, thanks for tuning in to Eagles Green Zone. You were one of the first people to train for the Combine, and now thousands of players do it. Like, was that your idea or trainers? How did that come about?
Well, there was a guy who actually I think still works with Tom Coughlin at the Giants, Jerry Palmieri. He would have us do Combine drills during winter workouts, and really nobody knew what we were. We just were working out, but lo and behold, those were all.